took their seats, a dozen of them on the couches and a few watchers nearby. "Ready?" Cade spoke aloud, pitched for her alone. Sam nodded. Something happened. 11 more minds grew larger in her perception. They brightened, swam more fully into focus. They were so full, so alive with thoughts and memories, emotions and desires. Her breathing synchronized with theirs. She closed her eyes and she could see and feel their individual lines of thought. 11 minds touched her at once in 11 parts of her psyche. Here was Brian's sheer joy at the crazy, meditative, ebullient madness of playing mind to mind with his friends. Here was Sandra's deep reservoir of calm and poise, her years of yoga, her pool of peace, anchoring those around her. This was samadhi to her. Here was Ivan's physicist's appreciation of the math and music in the interplay of dance and harmony and discord of the thoughts around him. Here was a vision in Leandra's mind of protein shapes, folds and receptors and binding sites, of a dozen men and women connected in mind to decode them. Here were tears on Josephine's face, tears of a joyous memory of childhood, fireworks with her beloved dad, lost to her, lost like... There were tears on Sam's face now. She didn't know why. She could feel Cade watching her, concerned. She had no answer for him. Each person had not one thread, but many. They intertwined in parallel, each connected to the others. Thoughts and memories, shifting and flowing. Sandra's first fumblings with other girls in her preteen years. Antonio's comprehension of quantum programming, the edges of understanding any of it just beyond what Sam could capture. Jessica's rapture in freefall dives from 12,000 feet, the adrenaline of jumping, the calm of popping the chute. Her bliss every time she hung below that fabric wing and steered herself to the ground, singing and breathing and soaring untethered. She knew Sandra's love of the stillness, the meditative, I am in my body glory of her daily practice. It spiraled within Sam, found her memories of sparring bouts, the absolute beauty of a perfect strike or block or dodge, the serenity of perfect form, the adrenaline of a hard and close fight, the endorphic come-down bliss that followed, and she felt Cade still. He was with them, with her, and his mind. She knew the beauty of the Nexus core, the sublimity of its design that awed him, staggered him. She tasted the pure abstract space within him where he did his best work, apprehended a tiny bit of the protocol he'd built with Rangan, the semantic layer between individual neural connections and whole thoughts. It was a glorious thing, a map of all the kinds of pieces of thoughts, an ontology of consciousness. It existed in him in part of his mind beyond doubt or fear or even consideration of others, part of him so beautiful and yet so distant and so alien and so very, very much hers for this brief time. Sam saw through his eyes, saw the flows of thoughts and emotions and experiences as bits and packets and traffic patterns, not cold and dry, but gorgeous in a symphonic way, an orchestral way. They were individual instruments coming together to create a richly textured whole, greater than the sum of its parts. She saw his aspirations to transcend the boundaries of individual minds, saw how Ilya had shaped his thoughts, saw a glimpse of the path he thought might just be feasible, his wonder at a future nothing like the past. She was crying then, crying because Cade's mind was so crystal clear and his vision so pure and so awe-inspiring in its way, and yet so terrifying to her. Crying with Josephine at shared loss of parents ripped away in youth, of childhood lost. Crying at the loss of Cade's parents so recently. Crying at a memory of pain and fear that Sandra had uncovered. Sam, wounded in the night, left arm hanging useless, blood dripping into her eyes, terrified, not sure if she would see the dawn, not sure she could get past the one last guard. She was confused, disoriented. Memories that made no sense were arising. Josephine experienced Sam's memories of her parents' last Christmas in San Antonio. Yet she also knew Sam's sorrow at the death of them years in the past, at the horror of something not clean, not fast, not accidental. Leandra's experiences in proteomics touched Sam's identity as a data archaeologist. Sam worked for corporations to unlock value from their legacy intellectual assets, not third-world government databases, not records of human and transhuman experiments. She felt their collective concern, Cade most of all, felt them reaching out more tendrils to her, to soothe her, buttress her. Each contact triggered a memory, an all-nighter in college cramming for her differential equations midterm, her first triathlon, that place beyond exhaustion, beyond bliss, beyond anything but moving her body again and again and again, pushing herself that hard in the Iranian Caspian, northeast of Sari, terrified out of her mind, trying to make that rocky beach in Turkmenistan, not knowing if backup would truly be there. Sam was losing her mind. She liked to bike. She swam. She'd graduated with a master's in DA with honors. She had two loving parents. She had a memory of a gun, huge in her young hands. The man she'd shot lying in a puddle of his own blood, slowly bleeding to death, deserving this and more for the horrors he'd inflicted. Yet Sam remembered her training for this mission. Another dose of Nexus, Nexus 3, the palest shadow of her current experience. A briefing, an assignment, a mantra that veiled who she was. Sam understood then. It overwhelmed her. She understood who she was, understood the betrayal of herself that this experience constituted. It came out in a jumble through the upper layers of her mind. Sam felt the bewilderment of the mind she was connected to, each of them seeing just a part of it, felt their growing alarm. She had seconds to act. No! It came out as a scream from her mind and throat, unforced, perfect for her needs. Sam wrenched her mind away from them as brutally as she could, felt things tear inside her, saw and knew them stunned and disoriented. She remembered her name, Samantha. Samantha Catarones. She remembered who she was. Tactical contacts came online, had always been online, dropped layers of threats and recommendations and escape vectors and supplemental information on her. Extract, 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 her display read. Arrows pointed towards escape vectors, alternate exits, ceiling hatch 70 feet above her, likely weak points in the wall. Back out the door she'd come in through. She chose the latter. Samantha Catarones stood up. Force of will pulled her out of the chaos of the drug high. Years of training took over. She swept her vision across the scene around her. A score of names lit up, faces recognized, bios scrolling, all green or yellow, no gross threats. Her fingers found her slimline in her boot, tripped the emergency uplink sequence. Buffer data pulsed out instantly at emergency power, everything she'd seen and heard going out to her watchers. The phone pulsed once, twice, three times, violating FCC power regs by a cool order of magnitude, expending a quarter of its fuel cell to get the message out. White noise shot through mind space, tearing up mental cohesion. Sam saw one or two go down with their hands to heads. Her own head ached. The music stopped. She turned towards the door then. The voices and minds around her were starting to burble, coming out of their stunned and pained silence. Few of them had caught what had really happened, but they had caught on that something bad had occurred indeed.
That was sick. That was wrong. I can't believe I took part in that, she thought.
Images of the mind meld she'd just experienced bounced through her, nauseating her, reminding her too much of what she'd killed to escape. Time for reminiscing later. She caught a glimpse of Cade on his knees, vomiting onto the floor. She felt a pang of pity, of regret. Time for that later, too. She strode towards the entrance, locked her mind down. Crowds parted. Then she felt a mind against hers, saw him move to block her path. Watson Cole. He felt hard, poised, resigned. Pacifist or no, he was not going to let her pass. Combat threat. Extreme caution. Alternate routes flashed on her display. Arrows towards other escape vectors. She could turn and run, beat him to an exit. But Sam was not in the mood to let some burned-out jarhead stand in her way. She blanked her mind, weaved towards him unsteadily on the floor, brought her left hand to her stomach, her right to her face, feigned a disoriented stumble to the left as she reached him, came out of it in a vicious right-hand backfist to his temple. Watts was unfooled. The big black marine had anticipated the move, or something like it. He brought his hand up to block, fell back, barely twisted the blow aside as he gave ground. Good. She was faster than he was. Her fourth-generation enhancements outclassed the Marine Corps' third-generation techniques. The ERD saved the best for its own. Sam's next two blows were already in the air in the close space between them. Hard jab to his solar plexus, low kick to his knee. Watts parried the first, still falling back, lifted his leg and let his raised calf absorb the damage of her kick. Cole was good, experienced, deadly. The Marine Corps' third-generation viral upgrades had made him stronger, faster, less sensitive to pain than any normal man. Sam was smaller, shorter of reach, lighter of muscle, but she'd been taught by the best, and she had the better technology. Fourth-generation post-human genetics gave her nerves like quicksilver, muscles like corded titanium, and bones of organic carbon fiber. She'd become something like the thing she hated. She'd stared into the abyss, and it had transformed her. To destroy evil, she had become it. Watts countered her superior speed by giving ground, step by step. Sam stayed in close as he did, neutralizing his advantage and reach. They moved in a blur of strikes, dodges, and blows, almost too fast for any onlooker to follow. She could see him coming up now, see the adrenaline hitting him, making him a more dangerous foe. Behind her, she felt flashes of courage and anger. Partygoers thinking of joining the fray. Before long, they would mob her. End this now, then. A gambit. A sacrifice. She let him create a foot of space to get his comfort, parried three more blows, threw feints at groin and eyes and plexus, then came in wide and sloppy, hole in her guard at midsection. Watts saw the opening and threw a brutal fist at it, low and under her nearly unbreakable ribs. She accepted the fist, twisting to mute it, felt pain blossom inside her as he connected. As she twisted, she brought one hand down like a vice on his wrist, yanked him off balance as she planted a leg behind his knees and slammed her other hand into his shoulder to bring him down. Watts saw it coming, but it was too late. The gambit had worked. He went down fast and hard. Sam's booted foot flashed out, connected with his head, twice, three times. She stopped herself. Don't kill. Incapacitate. Her breath was fast, pulse elevated. She'd taken serious but not immediately life-threatening damage. Time to leave. She stepped over Watt's unmoving form towards the door. And then she felt it. Felt him. Cade. He was behind her. He was inside her mind. She could feel his anger and hurt, his confusion, his sense of betrayal, his self-loathing at having been so easily fooled, having risked so much on behalf of so many people and let them down. Despite herself, she felt a pang of guilt at how she'd deceived him, at the hell he was going to pay. "No," he said. He was about to do something to her mind, Sam knew. She saw it in his thoughts. He was a threat. She turned, crossed the space between them in three long steps. Don't kill. Incapacitate. She lunged forward, hard back fist snapping out at his temple. No! She heard him in her mind, felt his will slam against something inside her. Hard fist connected with civilian body. All went black. 4. The Noose. Sam swam slowly back to consciousness. Darkness. Her eyes were closed, head slumped. She stayed that way. Better to feign unconsciousness as long as she could and learn the situation. There were voices around her, people talking.
So she's what, a DEA agent?
That was Rangan Shankari, the DJ.
Not DEA.
A voice responded slowly.
Homeland Security, Emerging Risks Directorate.
That deep bass, Watson Cole.
ERD?
Ilya Alexander spat it out.
Fuck!
Rangan spoke again.
So, this Samara from the ERD, you think she's alone?
Her name's not Samara. That was Cade. It's Samantha. Samantha Cararanes. She had some way of hiding it. Her memories were a mask somehow. The group meditation messed it up for her.
They know my name,
she thought to herself.
She's awake,
Ilya said. Sam's muscles rebelled then. Against her will, her head jerked up, her eyes opened. Someone was in her mind, controlling her body. That realization snapped her to alertness, sent a jolt of fear up her spine. These were very dangerous people. She was in a cluttered storage room, sitting in a straight-back chair, arms tied or strapped behind her back, ankles tied to the chair legs. As if those restraints were necessary when her nexus-dosed brain was splayed open to those around her. Her left side ached where Watts had landed his blow, internal bleeding, likely. Eyes shifted to her at Ilya's pronouncement. Rangan stood above her and to her left, arms crossed in his ridiculous Sufi robe, eyes angry and intent. He was the one in her mind. Ilya had fists clenched at her sides. Watts was to her right, an ugly bruise already covering one side of his face where Sam's boot had slammed into him. His eyes were cold and hard. Behind them, slumped in a chair, ice pack to his head, was Cade, staring at the floor. Rangan spoke again.
You'd better start talking, girl.
She felt a jolt of pain as he spoke, and a compulsion to speak. He was twisting something in her mind. All four of them were opaque to her. Sam could feel the hard external shells of their minds and the hard tendril inside her own, but nothing more. She felt a brief longing for the communion she'd felt at the height of the party. It nauseated her. Sam cleared her throat and wet her lips. She tasted blood.
Rangan Shankari, Ilyana Alexander, Watson Cole, Caden Lane. You're all under arrest.
Watts shook his head slowly, the corners of his lips turning up slightly in admiration of her audacity. Rangan made a small noise in his throat. Ilya just stared.
You're under arrest for the crime of trafficking in an ERD Alpha Class prohibited technology and a DEA Schedule 1 controlled substance. In addition to that, development and use of a coercion technology, attempting to construct an unlicensed non-human intelligence in violation of the Chandler Act, kidnapping and interfering with an officer of the law.
Rangan blanched.
No Miranda rights? Watts asked. No right to remain silent? What if I want to see a lawyer?
He sounded coolly amused. Sam locked eyes with him.
Those don't apply. Your research is designated a potential threat to humanity. You have no rights in that situation. Your best option is to give up now. It'll go easier on you if you surrender. If my support squad moves in, I can't guarantee your safety. They won't hesitate to use force.
Watts's eyes narrowed. He turned to his compatriots.
See what I mean?
Rangan cut in, speaking to Sam.
Your transmission didn't make it out of the building. There's no cavalry coming. You're stuck here with us.
Sam tried to shake her head, found that Rangan's vice-like mental hold wouldn't let her. She spoke firmly, with more confidence than she felt.
Think it through. The ERD knows I'm in this building with Cade. They know that you're here, too. By now, they know everyone that's gone in and out of this building for the last week. Eventually, my backup will come knocking. And if I disappear, they're going to tear this place and all of you apart looking for me. The kid gloves are on right now. They won't be on for long.
Always project confidence,
Nakamura had taught her.
Even when they have the physical upper hand, you can have the psychological advantage.
Ilya turned to Rangan.
What can you do to her memories?
Rangan thought for a moment, then slowly shook his head and turned behind him.
Cade?
Cade didn't reply. His eyes stayed glued on the floor.
Cade!
Ilya snapped.
Focus! Can you erase her memories of tonight? Fuzz them out.
Cade looked at Sam for the first time. Their eyes met. Sam wished again that she could feel his mind. She hated that fact. "Nothing subtle," he said. "Probably nothing very effective, and it might do some other damage along the way." Sam didn't like where this was going. That cold chill was creeping further up her spine. She broke Cade's gaze, looked hard at Ilya.
"I thought non-consensual mind-fucking was rape. Isn't that what you wrote last year? The worst kind of violation possible?"
Rangan rolled his eyes.
"Oh, this bitch is good."
Ilya looked at Sam. She looked hard and aristocratic.
"I'd rather wipe your memories than kill you. Be grateful."
A Russian accent was flaring up.
"There will be no killing here," Watts pronounced.
Cade spoke up.
"It doesn't matter. They know she's here. They know who we are. We're made."
"So what's the alternative, Cade?"
Ilya asked. Watts cut in. He spoke slowly, firmly.
"We need to evac according to our plans. Her memories are irrelevant. It's time to do what we've prepared to do. Leave here for a safer place."
Ilya laughed nervously.
"You're kidding, right?"
"No," Watts replied. "Cade is right. This woman isn't here on her own. She was sent. Secrecy has been compromised. That means we're all in danger right now. At this point, every second counts. If we act immediately, we might slip the net. The longer we wait, the worse our odds."
Sam spoke up.
"Listen, just stay calm, okay? You're not going to make it out of here. This place is under a magnifying glass right now. My team has been tracking me constantly. There'll be stealthed ERD scopes aimed at every exit. Running is not going to help. Give up, and it'll go easier on you. Try to run or mess with my memories, and you'll get the book thrown at you."
"She's lying," said Rangan.
"I'm not lying."
"Then you're holding something back. What is it?"
Sam took a deep breath. Rangan pushed against her thoughts. Something in her mind bent.
"He's doing something to my mind," she thought.
She found herself speaking again.
"It's Cade," she told them.
She looked at him.
"My superiors want you to do a job for them. My mission here was twofold, to get intel on what research you were really doing, and to get leverage that could be used to compel you to take part in an upcoming ERD mission."
Cade looked surprised. "What do they want me for?" Again, she felt the pressure from Rangan. She tried to resist. Words tumbled out.
"We want him to get close to someone building a mind control technology, possibly based on Nexus."
"I won't do it," said Cade. Ilya rounded on him.
"Wait, Cade, think about it. If they want you for something, that gives you leverage. You can negotiate to get the charges dropped."
"What about everyone else here?" asked Cade. "All the people who came to the party."
"We're not local cops," said Sam. "We're ERD. We care about the technology. If you cooperate, your guinea pigs here probably aren't in much trouble. If not, you and everyone here are in a deep pile of shit."
"I want them all off the hook. Rangan and Ilya and Watts too. No arrest, no jail, no probation, nothing." Sam wanted to shake her head again, but couldn't.
"I'm not the person for you to bargain with. Surrender and come in with me. Just you four. No one else has to even know what's going on. Then we can negotiate."
Watts spoke to Rangan.
"Can you blur her senses? Make it so she can't hear us, can't read our lips?"
Rangan nodded. Sam started to object, found that she couldn't speak. Her vision started to fail. It narrowed into a tunnel, grayed out, then simply vanished. She didn't see blackness. She simply didn't see. Sound disappeared. She was blind and deaf. Sam fought to choke down a rising panic. Few nightmares were worse for her than losing control of her mind and body.
"Breathe,"
she told herself. She could still feel her body, still feel her chest rise and fall. Still feel her arms tied behind her back and her feet tied to the chair. She clung to that solidity. Watts exhaled slowly. How to convince these kids of what was necessary?
"Listen. This woman will say anything to you to achieve her goals. She's lied from the beginning. She's going to keep on lying. Once the ERD have you in custody, you're theirs. You won't get a lawyer. They can do whatever they want to you, and you won't ever get out from under it. You understand?"
He looked around the room. Ilya met his eyes. Rangan was nodding, his face pale. Cade still had his eyes on the ground. Watts could feel their emotions. Rangan, fear and anger. Ilya, defiance. Cade, guilt and self-doubt. He was reprimanding himself for creating this situation.
Cade, sit up straight, my friend. It doesn't matter how we got here. We're here.
Watts saw Cade nod at his words, felt the kid get fractionally more of a grip on his emotions.
Look, our getaway plans are solid. If we stay, they have us for sure. If we bolt right now, we have a chance. It's a deep, dark hole or a chance at getting out. We gotta do the sensible thing.
He paused, looking around. Rangan was ready. He didn't know what to make of Ilya and Cade's emotions.
Okay, you all ready? Rangan, can you knock her out and leave her that way for a few hours?
I'm not going, Cade said. Watts paused again. Then,
Cade, if you stay, it's over. You won't ever get free of them.
Cade nodded. I know. It's just, if we run, what happens to everyone else here? Antonio, Jessica, Andy, the volunteers that measured out the doses and hooked up the repeaters. Do we tell all them to run too? They don't have fake passports. They don't have some place to run to. They just get fucked. Hell, what about Tanya, Watts? Watts flushed.
If you stay here, you get fucked too, he replied.
Cade shook his head. Ilya's right. If they want me for something, then I have leverage. It's a bargaining chip. I can get other folks off the hook.
You have bigger things to attend to,
Watts replied. Now Cade exuded anger.
That's a cop-out, Watts. We created this situation. It's our responsibility.
He calmed himself, spoke more softly.
Actually, you know what? It's my responsibility.
He shook his head. Watts let his breath out slowly again. He had to reach this kid.
Cade, it's important that you get out of here. All three of you. What you're doing here is powerful. It has potential. It can save a lot of lives. It can end wars. It's bigger than you. It's more important than just this party. You're more important.
I'm not more important than the 100 people out there, Cade said sharply.
Your work is...
Ilya cut in.
What's... We can't let the ends justify the means. These people haven't done anything wrong. We haven't done anything wrong. We have to fight... We can take this public, take it to the press.
Watts shook his head, so naive.
Ilya, they're not gonna let you, don't you see? You have no rights in this country, not as of tonight. They're not gonna let you near the press, and even if they did, no one would care.
Ilya stood her ground.
We have to try. We have to stand up and fight for what's right.
She exuded resolve, defiance. This wasn't going to work. Watts saw. As much as he'd tried to educate them on the realities of the world, they wouldn't ever understand until they'd experienced it firsthand. He turned to Cade.
Then give me the code, he said. The design, the blueprints, the recipe, all of it. If you disappear, I'll get it out into the world.
Cade shook his head. It's not ready yet.
Cade, if you go to jail, it'll never get out. This may be your only chance left to make a difference with it.
Cade kept shaking his head. It's too easy to abuse. Look at what we're doing to her right now. He gestured towards the now blind and deaf ERD agent tied to the chair. If we let it out now, people will get hurt. Watts kept his breathing steady, held on to his calm.
Then I'll find someone trustworthy to keep working on it until it is ready. Don't let it go down the drain.
Rangan interjected.
I'm not staying either.
Cade turned and looked at him. There was no surprise there. He just nodded.
Okay. I'm the one with the bargaining chip. The rest of you get out of here. You too, Ilya.
I'm with you,
she said.
We have to fight for what's right.
Watts relaxed fractionally. Rangan had the full code and design. If Rangan got out too, then all was not lost. Then he looked again at Cade and at Ilya. These were his friends, the best friends he'd made since he'd left the Corps. He doubted he'd ever see them again. He let his eyes drink up the sight of them. Watts picked Cade up in a bear hug. Cade winced, then relaxed into it. Watts moved on to Ilya. picked her up off the ground and twirled her around. She squealed, despite the grave circumstances. There were tears in her eyes. Then Rangan said his goodbyes as well. At the door, Watts turned and soaked up the sight of Ilya and Cade once more.
"I won't forget you,"
he promised.
"Good luck."
Then he and Rangan were gone. Saturday, 2040, 0218, 2108 hours. Department of Homeland Security, West Coast Tactical Situation Center, 350 miles to the south, ERD Special Agent Garrett Nichols watched the developing situation with some interest. Five of them clustered in the command and control room at the Department of Homeland Security Tactical Situation Center outside Los Angeles. The Drug Enforcement Agency liaison and the Department of Homeland Security Counterterrorism Division liaison sat quietly behind him. This was a joint operation, but given its nature, the Emerging Risks Directorate of DHS had operational command. His two analysts sat at the consoles in front of him. Half a dozen giant screens filled a wall that all of them could see. Screen one showed overhead false-color visual of Somogny Field, as seen from the Coast Guard's HQ-37 Sky Eye, flying silent circles 1,000 feet above it. Hangar 3 was their focus. Lights illuminated either end of the vast building. Cars in the nearby parking lot shone in infrared, their engines still warm. On screen 2, a running stream of tagged identities of attendees. Every vehicle arriving was having its registration quietly interrogated. Every person who stepped out of a vehicle was being optically face-printed. Their profiles streamed across the screen. Almost everyone was an associate of targets Alpha through Delta. Screen 3 showed the status of their two ground units and the squads within them. Screen 4 showed the status and location of California Highway Patrol and Mountain View Police units standing by to assist. Screen 5, where the stream of data from Agent Blackbird should be, was blank. It would update when she left the EM shielding and her surveillance devices uploaded what she'd seen and heard in the intervening time. Being out of contact with a field agent always made Nichols nervous. Tonight was no exception. Sight and sound slowly faded back into Sam's reality. She heard her own breathing first. Then saw the tiniest hint of light. Shapes. A wall. She blinked, and the world came back more strongly. She was still in the same room. Cade was here, slumped in a chair. No sign of Watts, Rangan, or Ilya. She tried to wiggle her toes. Nothing. Fingers. Nothing. Still paralyzed. Nichols and his team watched the hangar closely, waiting for Blackbird to emerge. It might be hours yet until the Nexus party wound down. On scope, a small number of people came and went from the party. A cluster of smokers emerged around the east exit. Three couples snuck out to find private time outside the structure. A dozen stragglers arrived late and were let into the building. Seven individuals left in the same time frame. All groups were face-printed. None were among the primary targets. A young man emerged in a hoodie, his face hidden from the aerial camera, his body glowing in infrared. There was a tense moment as he crossed towards the neighboring golf course, then he pissed on a bush and strolled back to the party. Just after midnight, another couple emerged and strolled in the same direction. Face printing identified one as Tanya Wellington, a martial arts instructor residing in San Francisco. The other's face was shielded by a hooded sweatshirt. He was a large man, tall and broad. Could that be Cole? The two figures crossed slowly across the golf course, making no move towards the road or Sunnyvale. Eventually, their stroll led them to the edge of the San Francisco Bay. IR showed their forms entwine, their faces meet, their clothes begin to come off. Three individuals came out the east entrance, walked past the smokers, headed towards a car. The first two were ID'd successfully. The third kept his face in the shadows of the hoodie. The car door opened, and light momentarily illuminated him. Rangan Shankari.
"Get CHP on that car," Nichols ordered. "Just follow. I want to see where Shankari goes."
"Roger that,"
Jane Kim called out. "Why'd you do this to us?" Cade asked. He was slumped in the chair across the room once more, the ice pack to his head. Sam took a breath before answering.
What you're doing is illegal. My job is to uphold the law.
Cade shook his head. That's no answer. Why'd you choose this job?
Because what you're doing is dangerous. That's why I care. You're playing with fire.
This isn't a weapon. It's a new way to communicate. It connects people. You saw that. You felt it. Sam had felt it. She'd loved it, until she'd been horrified by it, by the discovery that she was not who she thought she was. She dodged the topic.
It can be abused. Maybe you wouldn't use it to hurt people, but others would.
It's not like that, said Cade.
It's a way of bridging the gap between people. It makes us smarter together than we could be apart. It can raise collective intelligence, collective empathy. Ilya talks about...
Sam cut him off.
Ilya talks about creating things that aren't human, Cade. Non-human intelligences.
Groups of humans, Cade retorted.
Human networks. Hive minds, Borgs, superorganisms,
Sam spat out.
What if they don't like us? How could they not like us? They'd be us.
Cade was getting heated now.
And what if I didn't want to join a hive? Would I be forced to, assimilated? Could I keep up if I didn't? Would there be a place for ordinary humans?
Cade exhaled in frustration.
Look, that's all paranoia. There are positive effects, too. It's not just paranoia, Cade. You have me under your thumb right now. You can make me do whatever you want. Rangan could, too. That's coercion, Cade. You've built a coercion technology, a way to control people, and you tell me this isn't a weapon?
Cade shook his head.
It's just a safety precaution. This is still experimental. Just a precaution, huh? Do other people have this back door in their heads? Can you paralyze any of your friends out in the party? Can you read their minds?
Cade said nothing, just looked down at his hands.
You can, can't you?
Sam continued.
Do they know? Have you told them that taking part in your little experiment hands you and Rangan the keys to their heads?
Cade shook his head, still not looking at her. It's a safeguard, that's all. We'd never release it like this.
How can you be so naive, Cade? You're a good guy. I felt that. But what about other people who get their hands on this? You think they won't reverse engineer it? You think they won't make slaves out of this? Suicide troops? Sex slaves? Worshippers?
Awful memories were rising up inside of her. The ranch, the cult, the way her parents had become cattle, or worse. She wanted to push them at Cade. Couldn't. He was opaque to her. She was cut off from his mind. Cade bristled.
This is stupid. You can hurt people with guns. You can get them to do awful things with words. Books are as dangerous as anything I'm doing. We need this. Our current problems can't be solved by the level of thinking that created them. Einstein said that. This can take us to a new level of thinking. Cade, it's going too fast,
Sam replied. She fought down the pain and despair of old memories, hardened herself. She despised the longing she felt to touch his mind and show him, hated the weakness of it, the wrongness of it. Damn this drug. Damn this mission.
You're talking about changing everything about people, the way we've been for 100,000 years, in a heartbeat. You can't know the consequences. You can't understand how people will abuse this. You can't know that humanity will survive this. We have to slow down the rate we're becoming something that's not human.
Cade glared at her. You're one to talk. You're not quite baseline human yourself, are you? Nichols turned his attention back to the couple at the edge of the water. The red blobs in the IR scope were bent over, making odd motions. What were they doing? It clicked. They were taking off their shoes, and now their pants. A little rendezvous on the beach. The couple now appeared to be kissing passionately. Red lines blurring in IR, only heads and limbs distinguishable in the image. He was about to look away when they did something he didn't expect. They turned, hand in hand, and ran into the bay, water splashing up around them. They ran till they were hip-deep, the lower halves of their bodies disappearing from IR view, and then dove head-first into the water and vanished under the waves entirely.
Isn't that water a little cold for a swim this time of year?
Nichols asked aloud.
I was just thinking the same, Bruce Williams replied. Can't be much more than 50 degrees.
On screen, 20 feet further out, the head and shoulders of one of the red blobs, Nichols held his breath. Wait for it. Wait for it. Nothing. The other was nowhere to be seen.
Fuck! He exclaimed. Get Mobile 2 there now! Scramble the mini-drones! Light that place up! Find that guy!
Kim and Williams furiously hit keys. On screen, Mobile 2 turned on its lights and spun tires as it accelerated to the spot, leaving the road and crashing into the manicured greens of the course. A narrow beam spotlight shot out from the overhead sky eye. The naked figure in the water turned, put her face in the water, and kicked towards shore.
And pull over the car with Shankari in it, Nichols called out.
Yes, sir,
Jane Kim replied. A tense minute passed, and then another. Mobile 2 arrived at the scene and took Tanya Wellington into custody. Yes, she confirmed, that had been Cole, and no, she had no idea where he was going. Cole was gone. If he had a rebreather, or had undergone black market blood hyperoxygenation, he could stay down for hours. He could come up anywhere. Unless they were very, very lucky, he was gone. California Highway Patrol had more luck. On screen, a cruiser pulled in behind the vehicle carrying Rangan Shankari. Moments later, they had him in custody. Sam took her time in replying.
I'm human, Kate. I've made compromises. I've accepted things that are necessary for me to do my job, to help keep people safe.
Funny, Cade said. I don't feel any safer with you around.
You don't see the things we do on your behalf.
I saw what you did tonight.
There are monsters out there, Cade, Sam said. We have to stop them.
I'm no monster.
You're no monster, Sam agreed. But they're out there. There are people who would do awful things with this technology.
There are people who would do wonderful things with it, too, Kate replied.
We'll put safeguards in. That's always been the plan. We don't want this used for mind control any more than you do. Other people will reverse engineer the technology. They'll remove the safeguards or figure out how to build a clone system that doesn't have them. That's how it always works. Once the genie is out of the bottle, you can't control what they do.
Kate threw up his hands in frustration.
You can't control what people do with phones, or planes, or the net, he replied. People do terrible things with all of those, but the good things outweigh them. Should we take all of those back, too?
Those don't change what we are. We're still human.
You get to decide who's human? Pretty damn arrogant.
Sam tried to stay cool. Didn't entirely succeed.
Arrogant. You're the one who's taking risks that could affect billions of people. You're the one threatening to make real humans obsolete. Do you have any idea the danger you're putting the whole world in?
Cade shook his head bitterly.
You have this so backwards. I'm not making choices for anyone. I'm giving people options. I'm giving them new decisions to make for themselves. You're the one taking people's freedoms away. You're the one locking people up for doing the wrong science or for trying something new.
He stabbed an accusatory finger in her direction.
If there's any monster here, it's you!
The state trooper placed Rangan in the back of his squad car. Bruce Williams patched Nichols into the CHP comm system. Nichols put on his headset.
Rangan Shankari? He asked.
Silence. On the screen, Rangan looked towards the floor of the vehicle, making no sign he'd heard.
Mr. Shankari, you are now in the custody of the Emerging Risks Directorate. My name is Special Agent Nichols.
More silence.
Mr. Shankari, is Samara Chavez still inside Hangar 3? What's her status?
I want to see my lawyer.
Rangan uttered the words without looking up.
Mr. Shankari, you're under suspicion of very serious crimes in breach of the Emerging Technological Threats Act. Under these conditions, you don't have the right to a lawyer.
Silence. Nichols continued.
What I care about is the safety of Samara Chavez. Is she still in that building? What's her situation?
Rangan said nothing.
Mr. Shankari, I have a team of men ready to knock down the door of that building and do whatever it takes to get my agent out. There are also at least 100 civilians in the building, many of whom are your friends. If we go in with force, some of your friends could be hurt. Do you understand me?
Suck my dick.
Nichols was irritated now.
Rangan, you may think you're accomplishing something with this, but you're not. If you're covering for your friends, we already have Watson Cole.
Nichols lied.
What we want is to know if Samara Chavez is still alive, and a way to communicate with the people inside that building to get her out.
Rangan said nothing, but shifted slightly in his seat.
If you don't help me, we're going in, and people are likely to get hurt. People might get killed. You understand that?
Rangan shifted again.
I want my lawyer.
You're not going to get one. Are you going to help us, or do we kick in the door and start shooting?
Rangan visibly hesitated, then spoke.
They're going to let her go in a couple hours.
Nichols leaned back in his seat. So, she was alive and being held.
Let's end this now, he said. Not a couple hours from now. You're going back in there, and here's what you're going to tell your friends inside.
15 minutes later, a black SUV deposited him outside the hangar's back entrance.
If there's any monster here, it's you!
The handle of the door to the storage room turned. Both Cade and Sam turned, startled, to see Ilya entered, a glum look on her face, trailed by Rangan, dressed in a gray hoodie and jeans. Rangan looked pale and unhappy. His eyes were fixed on the ground in front of him. Party sounds followed them in.
They caught me,
Rangan announced. His voice shook. Cade could feel the bitterness of it. The words tasted like ashes in his mouth.
They sent me back in to deliver a message, Rangan said. They have this place surrounded. They have Watts, too.
Oh. Cade felt it like a blow.
They want the three of us to come out with her.
Rangan nodded towards Sam, still bound to the chair.
They want us to shut down the party, send everyone home with some excuse and surrender ourselves. Just us. We're not to mention the ERD at all. If we don't come out in 30 minutes, they say they'll come in here with guns out.
What about everyone else here? Cade asked.
As long as we surrender, everyone else can go home.
I'd rather make a scene, said Ilya. Force them to arrest 100 of us, take it public, show people what they're doing. That's how we fight.
Everyone knows what they're doing, Rangan said. No one cares. We're just druggies to them.
Cade spoke up. I don't want other people going to jail because of us. That was the whole point of not running.
That was part of the point,
Ilya said.
The other part is standing up for what's right. We've done nothing wrong. The ERD are the bad guys here. We can show the world that...
Cade shook his head. No, this is our fault to take.
I'm with Cade,
Rangan said softly. Ilya bowed her head. She didn't look convinced. Her mind felt angry to Cade, defiant.
Fine,
she said.
I'll go start shutting things down.
She left through the open door. Rangan looked at Cade.
You okay?
Cade nodded, but said nothing. Minutes passed. They waited in silence. What's taking so long? Cade wondered. Just then, through the door, they heard the current track fade, Ilya's amplified voice, something about a noise complaint, the party over, time to go, drive safe. Ilya returned shortly after that. Her eyes were wet. Had she been crying? He wanted to comfort her, but she felt hard and angry.
I left Antonio in charge of clearing people out,
she said.
That'll take a while. We might as well go now.
They said to head out the side entrance and walk towards the golf course parking lot,
Rangan said. Ilya untied the rope around Sam's feet, helped her up with a hand on her bicep. Sharp pains lanced up Sam's left side as she rose. She ignored them. The four of them walked out of the storage room, turned and took a hallway away from the main hangar area. A minute later, Rangan opened the side door of the hangar, and they emerged into the cool night air. Sam's contacts immediately lit up with the positions of the DEA SWAT team that was providing her support on this mission. The two vehicles were 100 yards ahead. Two agents were with the vehicles. four more in a loose perimeter blocking possible escape. All showed ready to fire, half with lethal loads, half with trank. A green handshake glyph showed that their tactical systems had registered hers as well. She looked to her right at Rangan, squinted to illuminate him as a target, then Cade on her left, squinted and hit the fire icon with her eyes. Rangan started to turn, the start of a frown on his face. Sam felt him tense in her mind. Then tranquilizer rounds shot out from two agents and hit each man in the neck. They went down like comic actors, hands rising to the sudden wasp stings at their necks, gurgling cries of surprise, then eyes going glassy, balance lost, toppling into loose-limbed heaps.
Bitch!
Sam felt Ilya grab her physically from behind, her arm around Sam's throat. Sam spun to present a clear shot on the woman to the shooters, heard the thwap of a silenced trank dart, and a moment later felt the grasp around her neck loosen and Ilya's limp body crumple to the ground. Watson Cole came up for air under the Dumbarton Bridge. He slid his body slowly into the shallows where it came to ground in Menlo Park, gradually letting just his face rise above the level of the water. With luck, the bridge would shield him from any cameras, IR or visual, searching for him from above. He'd swum more than 6 miles underwater, an exhausting feat in the best of times. He needed time to let his blood hyperoxygenate again. He rested a moment, then started the pressure breathing that would accelerate his uptake of precious oxygen. He had miles to go before he slept. 5. Leverage. Rangan woke slowly. His head ached. His muscles were cramped. His stomach restless. God, what a hangover. What had he been doing last night? What time was it? He cracked one eye to take a peek. This was not his bedroom. Memory rushed back. Oh, fuck. Rangan sat bolt upright. He was on a thin mattress atop a rigid metal bench along the wall of a starkly white cell. Fuck, fuck, fuck. He looked down at himself. His clothes were gone, his watch, his shoes. He was in shapeless gray cotton slacks, like hospital pants, and a baggy gray shirt. Prison garb. They'd taken his phone, his wallet, everything. Think, Rangan, think. If there was an unguarded net connection here, he could get online, maybe figure out where he was, maybe get a message out as insurance. Nexus OS would have the tools to locate an open net connection. It wasn't running. It must have crashed last night when they'd tranked him.
Nexus restart,
he mentally commanded. The boot sequence scrolled across his vision. Nexus OS 0.7 by Axon and Synapse. Built on Mod OS 8.2 by Free Software Collective. 8,947,692,017 nodes detected. 9,161,412,625,408 bits available. Visual Cortex Interface 0.64, active. Auditory Cortex Interface 0.59, active. Moore scrolled across his vision as the operating system they'd ported to the Nexus platform came to life. He paced as it booted. In a top-secret facility outside Washington, D.C., two men stared at a wall screen. One man was tall, fit, square-jawed, in a dark suit, hands clasped behind his back. Enforcement Division Deputy Director Warren Becker. The other was a scientist, wearing rumpled clothes and old-fashioned spectacles with a shock of unruly white hair. Neuroscience Director Martin Holtzman. On the screen, a dark-skinned, bleached blonde man in prison fatigues was pacing a small, starkly white cell. Rangan Shankari.
I still don't think this is necessary, Holtzman said.
We have to know if your weapon works, Becker replied.
Holtzman shook his head.
It works. We've seen it work, many times.
Becker turned to look at him, then looked back at the wall showing Rangan Shankari.
Martin, we need to know if it works against Nexus 5. We don't know what changes they've made since Nexus 3.
We can find that out in animals, Holtzman replied.
Becker raised an eyebrow.
And if it doesn't work the same in mice and in men...
Holtzman was silent for a moment.
There are dangers. We should do the animal studies first, assess the safety, then try humans.
Becker considered this for a moment.
We don't know when we'll have this opportunity again. If this doesn't work, we'll need to spend more time refining your weapon. If it does work against Nexus 5, we have that much more confidence that it will work against our eventual target.
Holtzman grunted.
Warren, I can't ethically...
Becker held up his hand to interrupt. Holtzman paused.
Thank you, Martin. Given our mission priorities, I'm going to proceed. I'll take note of your reluctance. We'll keep this as brief as possible.
Holtzman bowed his head. Becker pitched his voice to address the wall.
Activate Nexus Disruptor!
Rangan could find no signal on any frequency. The room seemed to be entirely EM shielded.
Damn!
What now? Searing pain burst across Rangan's mind. His head was on fire, alive with 1,000 decibels static, threatening to burst. A scream drove its way out of his lips. Every muscle in his body convulsed. He toppled forward to the floor. Errors and warnings streamed at high speed across his consciousness. Interface error. Memory out of bounds. Interface error. Memory out of bounds. Interface error. Socket not found. OXA49328A. Interface error. Socket not found. OXA49328B. Interface error. Socket not found. OXA49328C. Interface error. Socket not found. OXA49328D. And on and on and on. Thousands of lines of hard errors scrolling across his vision. A massive fault like nothing he nor Cade had ever seen. Rangan was dimly aware of hitting the hard concrete floor. Everything was a blur of pain and white noise. His mind was in complete overload. He swam through oceans of static. Through the confusion, he could just barely grasp that something was wrong with the Nexus in his brain. He needed to stop it. There was something he could do. Something. What was it? Fuck, that hurt. Fuck, fuck, fuck! Another scream ripped through him, tore open his mouth against his will, roared its way into the echoing chamber of the cell. Thought vanished in a haze of pain and chaos. It was too much. There was no hope of coherence. There was nothing but noise. Noise. Nothing but noise in his mind. And then it was over. The pain ended as abruptly as it had begun. The onslaught of static across all his senses was gone. The spear driven into his brain had evaporated. His head hurt where it had hit the floor. It was nothing compared to what he'd just endured. Rangan drew breath, then shuddered. He was covered in sweat. His body was trembling. His breath came raggedly. He lay curled on the floor, shaking. On the wall screen, Shankari collapsed. His scream echoed out of the speakers. He curled on the floor, body spasming. Becker let it go on for a second. 2, 3, 4.
That's enough,
Holtzman said bitterly. Becker nodded.
Halt, disruptor,
he spoke aloud. Shankari's screams ended. The boy lay on the ground, curled in a fetal position.
Are you satisfied now?
Holtzman asked. His voice was acidic. Becker nodded slowly, calmly.
Yes.
Cade woke to bright light and a voice informing him that he had 5 minutes until his interview. His mouth tasted like dirt, his stomach was in rebellion, and his head felt like it had been worked over by a sledgehammer. He relieved himself, splashed water on his face, and then it was time to go. Two guards took him from his stark white cell to a conference room at the end of the hall. The room was furnished with a large fake wood table, chairs, and a wall screen. Cade took a seat as directed and waited. Less than a minute later, a door at the far side of the room opened and an official-looking man in a suit and tie entered, holding a leather-bound slate. He was followed by a shorter, older man in a rumpled white shirt and glasses, his head topped by disorderly white hair. There was something familiar about the second man.
"Mr. Lane," said the first man, as he made his way to the head of the table and sat. "I'm Enforcement Division Deputy Director Warren Becker.
This is Professor Martin Holtzman, whom you may know.
Holtzman, thought Cade. He'd been chair of the MIT Neuroengineering Department once. His lab had done good work in the neuroscience of volition. How was he involved with the ERD? Holtzman nodded in greeting.
Mr. Lane?
He said. He had a German accent. Becker spoke.
Mr. Lane, you're in some pretty serious trouble. You've been engaging in research in direct contravention of the Chandler Act. You've far exceeded the bounds of your ERD license. You've been caught engaging in the distribution and possibly the manufacture of a Schedule Zero narcotic. Do you understand the seriousness of your position?
Cade's head had slumped as Becker talked. His eyes were on the fake wood grain of the table he was seated at. He didn't trust himself to speak. After a minute, Becker spoke again.
You're in a deep pile of shit, Cade. The DEA wants to press full charges. My bosses want to classify you as a threat to humanity. The prosecutor assigned to this case has you down for...
Becker paused and looked down at his slate.
Violating your ERD research limits, violating the Chandler Act in multiple cases, development of a coercion technology, employment of a coercion technology in the first degree, kidnapping an agent of the law, assaulting an agent of the law, and more. All of this together adds up to a long, long time in a national security internment center, possibly life. Without parole. Those aren't pleasant places. You understand?
Cade nodded mutely.
Good. Now listen, this is an airtight case. The evidence is clear. If we press, you'll get all the penalties there are. But I don't think you're a terrorist. I think you've been stupid here, that's all. I'm on your side.
Like hell you are, Cade thought. Becker was still talking.
There's a way that you can help your country and help humanity, and if you do, then we can waive most of the punitive action against you.
Cade set his mouth in a grim line. Blackmail, he thought to himself. Just fucking blackmail. What about my friends? He asked. The people who were at the party. Becker nodded.
You care about your friends. That's good. They're in pretty deep piles of shit themselves. The DEA wants to press possession charges against everyone who was there last night, and distribution charges against everyone who helped throw the event. Our own prosecutor wants to level Chandler Act violations at you, Rangan Shankari, Watson Cole, and Ilyan Alexander.
Becker paused and shook his head.
But... if we have your full and complete cooperation, we can waive most of those charges.
Cade winced. Nexus possession had mandatory minimums of 2 years, not to mention likely expulsion from any decent school and never getting a job in science or research in the future. Distribution had a minimum of 7 years. Names and faces swam through his head. Antonio, Rita, Sven... all the people that had helped with the party, that had been responsible for giving out doses to other attendees. A lot of people could go to jail for a long time. And as for Rangan, Ilya, and Watts, they'd face the same penalties he would. Decades in a national security internment center. Life, maybe. His face was hot. He wanted to throw up at the thought of it.
Poker face, Cade. Poker face.
He straightened up a bit. He'd be damned if he'd break down here. What do you want me to do? He asked.
We want you to get close to someone, Becker replied. A fellow scientist in another country. We want you to apply for a position in their lab after your PhD. We want you to keep us informed regarding their work.
You want me to spy for you? Cade said.
Yes.
Why?
Because the scientist we want you to spy on may be doing some very bad things,
Becker answered.
Murder? Political assassination? Mind control? That sort of thing.
And why me? Cade asked.
"Because this scientist appears to have taken an interest in your work," Becker told him. "And now that we know what you've really been doing, we can see why."
"Who are we talking about here?" Cade asked.
"You find that out if you agree. If not, you go to jail just wondering."
Cade drummed his fingers on the table. Spying on a fellow scientist, he felt dirty.
"He said most of the charges?" he asked. "What are you offering?"
Becker nodded.
"Everyone there gets probation and mandatory drug testing for 3 years. They pass, it's gone from their record. You, Shankari, Cole, and Alexander are on a lifelong watch list. Mandatory testing. No use of advanced computing, bio, neuro, or nano tools, including Nexus. You're blacklisted for all federal science funding. No jail time."
Cade's vision dimmed. No funding. No computing or bio. No Nexus. "They're taking everything I care about away," he thought. He couldn't breathe for a moment.
"There is one way you can stay in science,"
Holtzman commented. Cade looked up at him.
"How?" "You could come work for me," Holtzman said. "Here at the ERD. To be doing